Okay, it's time for From the Hip with JT. JT has a particular subject today, and we're going to bring him up. JT, what are we talking about?
Today we're going to be covering the North American Union conspiracy exposed.
North American Union conspiracy exposed. Okay, sounds interesting. I'm going to let you go. This is March the 4th, 2007, From the Hip. Okay, JT, it's yours.
Thank you, sir. Hello again, brothers and sisters. This is JT, and we're going to discuss an article by Cliff Kincaid, an editor in the August Review Global Elite Research Center, that is an editor for Accuracy in Media Report. He's covering the North American Union conspiracy and exposing it. This is something that I just became aware of. It was probably, a couple months ago, about some of the things that the elite of this country and the political leaders are kind of focusing on. This ties into NAFTA. If you remember what NAFTA was, the North American Free Trade Agreement that happened through Clinton and some of the people who played in there. And there was a lot of information previously to this new information that was obviously very hot conspiracy topics regarding NAFTA that you can find still lots and lots of information on. And at that point in time, in comparison to the new developments since then, at that point in time, a lot of it was theory. And now the theory is becoming reality. And that's very exciting for people who are into this type of news. I was joking with Pilgrim on an email the other day. I said, you know, this stuff is great. I'm thinking of getting a subscription to the National Enquirer because it's funny. I don't watch a lot of TV or movies, but, you know, the Men in Black show, the Men in Black movie, I remember the guy went and got the Sun, the National Enquirer, and some of these other, you know, tabloid magazines, and of course, they're up with all the information about the aliens and everything else, and you know, the government's just a puppet as far as they're concerned. But they call those particular tabloids the best source of information on the planet. So this was all the news that, you know, everybody else hush hushes and stuff, and so. It's kind of a same scenario, and it's funny how Hollywood will portray that as, you know, being a fantasy when it's so much closer to the truth. But that's part of the whole double negative, you know, is to get everybody to say, oh, that's just Hollywood, you know what I mean, and sticking it out there. People are essentially going to believe what they want to believe. And, you know, that mainly is accordingly to what lines up with their own agendas. So let's take a look at what Cliff Kincaid has to say here. If anybody's interested, the August Review is a global elite research center, and you can find them at www.augustreview.com and just search their website. There's a lot of good editorial content, knowledge base. You can get a free e-subscription that will come out straight to your email. And every now and then I take a look at what comes in, and lo and behold, it is very interesting. If you spend some time on their website, you will discover that there's a lot of information that you know, you haven't heard about yet. So, he begins. A top Democratic Party foreign policy specialist said on Friday that a very small group charges absurd. But Robert Pastor, a former official of the Carter administration and director of the Center for North American Studies at American University, made the remarks at an all-day February 16th conference devoted to the development of a North American legal system. The holding of the conference was itself evidence that a comprehensive process is underway to merge the economies and perhaps the social and political systems of the three countries. Pastor said that he favors a North American community, not a formal union of the three countries, and several speakers at the conference ridiculed the idea of protecting America's borders and suggested that American citizenship was an outmoded concept. Wearing a lapel pin featuring the flags of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, Pastor told AIM that he favors a $200 billion North American investment fund to pull Mexico out of poverty and a national biometric identity card for the purpose of controlling the movement of the people in and out of the U.S. A national biometric identity card. So the conspiracy is now very much out in the open, if only the media would pay some attention to it. The media cover-up. Accuracy in Media attended the conference, that's AIM, Accuracy in Media, attended the conference in order to produce this report and shed light on a process that is being conducted largely beyond the scrutiny of the public or the Congress. AIM has previously documented that Pastor's campaign for a North American community has received precious little attention from the major media, except for the notable case of CNN's Lou Dobbs, who has called it utterly mad. In fact, a survey of news coverage discloses that several high-profile mentions of the concept of a North American economic, social, or political entity have come from Pastor himself, such as a Newsweek International article that he wrote. The conference, conducted in cooperation with the American Society of International Law, an organization affiliated with the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, was held at the American University Washington College of Law. A large number of speakers came from American University. Overruling the U.S. Supreme Court, academic literature distributed in advance to conference participants about a common legal framework for the U.S., Canada, and Mexico included proposals for a North American Court of Justice with the authority to overrule a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. A North American Trade Tribunal, a North American Court of Justice, and a Charter of Fundamental Human Rights for North America, also dubbed the North American Social Charter. Under the latter concept, according to Laura Spitz of the University of Colorado Law School, North Americans might be able to enjoy new rights essential to human flourishing, such as gay marriage. She argues in one paper that U.S. economic integration with Canada will make it nearly impossible for the United States not to recognize same-sex marriage so long as it is lawful in Canada. Pastor himself talked about new institutions such as a permanent tribunal on trade issues, but emphasized that such ideas take time and have to take root. He advised conference participants to think about the horizon in terms of what is possible over the course of 5, 10, or even 20 years from now. Conservative concerns about Pastor's Union, a political and economic entity of 27 European states, that includes a European Parliament and a European Court of Justice. The EU has been charged with usurping the sovereignty of MIFT on sensitive cultural issues such as the death penalty, abortion, and gay marriage, and that it might take a long time to harmonize their legal systems on such matters. While Pastor, a foreign policy advisor to each of the Democratic presidential candidates since 1976, tried to dismiss talk of a North American Union, he did emphasize in his remarks to the conference that North America is more than a geo-citizen and outlines a vision of the three countries taking their relationship to a new level. rather than use the phrase union, he described the creation of an emerging entity called North America, growing out of the fact that the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, passed in 1993, had brought about a remarkable degree of economic integration among the three countries. One panel was devoted to analyzing how NAFTA of Houston Law School denounced the idea of a wall separating Mexico and the U.S. in order to control illegal immigration, asking, what does citizenship mean anymore? He expressed pleasant surprise when a Mexican in the audience said she had dual citizenship in Mexico and the U.S. Later, he said he was just as concerned about people living in Mexico as people living in the U.S. Another speaker, Tom Ferrer, deems a backward thinker. Tancredo could be seen dragging his knuckles along the ground, Ferrer said, trying to crack a joke. No border control. Pastor acknowledged that the U.S. government doesn't want to enforce its immigration laws. He said, however, that the solution is not a fence, except in some isolated high-crime areas along the border, and it's not to punish companies for hiring illegal aliens. Another part of his solution, a $200 billion North American investment fund, is for the purpose of narrowing the income disparity between Mexico, on the one hand, and the U.S. and Canada, on the other. You need a lot of money to do it, and do it effectively, he said. He said Mexico would be required to put up half of the money, with the U.S. contributing 40% and Canada 10%. It would be done over 10 years. Migration to the U.S. So the failures of NAFTA are now being used not to repeal the measure, but to expand it and increase foreign aid to Mexico. Pastor said Senator John Cornyn, known as a conservative Republican, had introduced his North American Investment Fund as a bill in Congress, but had backed away from it under conservative fire. The nature of glossing over President Clinton's submission of NAFTA as an agreement, requiring only a majority of votes in both House of Congress for passage and not a treaty, requiring a two-thirds vote in favor in the Senate. NAFTA passed by votes of 234 to 200 in the House and 61 to 38 in the Senate. Tarr said he had not intended to be uncritical of what Clinton did. Pastor quickly entered to pass constitutional processes, and the United Steelworkers challenged NAFTA's constitutionality in court. The case reached the U.S. Supreme Court in 2001 after lower courts had thrown the case out, saying it was a political matter between the President and Congress. The Bush administration sided with Clinton, and the Supreme Court declined to get involved. The history of NAFTA is one reason why so many conservatives are conservatives who have formed a coalition to block the North American Union has been the lack of congressional interest and oversight. They are backing a bill introduced by Republican Virgil Good from Virginia to put Congress on record against a North American Union. The secretive STP. Another major concern is that the Bush administration has facilitated the creation of this in March 2005. It is described as a trilateral effort to increase security and enhance prosperity among the United States, Canada, and Mexico through greater cooperation and information sharing. But its working groups have been operating in secret, and many of the members are not even known. Judicial Watch, a conservative public interest law firm, had to go through Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff and Secretary of Commerce Carlos Gutierrez. The Clinton connection. Pastor's luncheon speaker, Eric Farnsworth, the Vice President of the Council of the Americas, provided some valuable insight into this process. Saying NAFTA is no longer enough, he described the SPP as designed to help North America meet the economic challenges to improve business conditions in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. He was unclear as to whether the U.S. government would try to implement these initiatives on its own through the administrative or regulatory process, or whether they would be submitted to Congress for approval. The Council's honorary chairman is David Rockefeller, and its board members come from such major corporations as Merck, PepsiCo, McDonald's, Ford, Citibank, IBM, Walmart, ExxonMobil, GE, which owns NBC News and MSNBC, and Time Warner, which owns CNN and Time Incorporated. One of the key board members is Thomas F. McLarty III, president of Kissinger McLarty Associates, who served as Clinton's White House counselor and chief of staff during the time that NAFTA was signed and passed by Congress. McLarty, who also functioned as a special envoy to the Americas under Clinton, is an advisor to the Carlyle Group, focusing on buyout investment opportunities in Mexico. Farnsworth mentioned the possible creation of a supranational Supreme Court governing business and trade issues in North America, but was ambiguous about whether it would ever come to pass. A self-described Democrat who served as policy director in the Clinton White House office of the special envoy for the Americas from 95 to 98, he also said that he was optimistic that Bush would strike a deal with the new Democratic-controlled Congress on immigration. He said Bush was at odds with his own party on immigration, and that legislation to create a so-called guest worker program could pass now that Republicans have lost control of Congress. The Panama Canal giveaway. For his part, Pastor, a friendly and engaging fellow who talks about his ideas at length with critics, has a history that goes far beyond deep personal involvement in the Democratic Party. Pastor is associated by conservatives with President Jimmy Carter's treaty, opposed by then-presidential candidate Ronald Reagan, which transferred control of the Panama Canal away from the U.S. to the Panamanian government. Pastor was National Security Advisor for Latin America under Carter. His nominee, President of International Affairs and Professor of International Relations at American University on September 1, 2002, when he created his Center for North American Studies. Pastor also served as Vice Chair of Convergence Issues. A sour note about the prospect of further integration with Mexico was provided at the conference by Alberto Zecli, a career ambassador and advisor to the Mexican Minister of Foreign Affairs, who said that the rule of law simply does not exist in Mexico and that corruption permeates governmental institutions. He said reforms under the presidency of Vicente Fox went nowhere and that Mexico is one of the most corrupt countries in the world today. Ironically, however, he said that the development of a North American legal system might in some way assist in cleaning up the Mexican legal system. Pastor, an optimist about the prospect of developing the North American community, told me that he didn't think the situation in Mexico was as bleak as Zecli made it out to be. He continues to be a proponent of continental thinking. We're going to get into the Bush administration's efforts to cover up the North American Union. Conspiracy theories, fringe nuts, lies, myths. These are the words used by officials of the Bush administration and others to brand those who have reported on the activities of the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, the SPP, currently operating out of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Conspiracy theories, fringe nuts, lies, myths. These are the words being used by officials of the Bush administration to brand those who have reported on the activities of the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, the SPP, currently operating out of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Opponents have charged the SPP will result in the establishment of a North American Union, much of the same lines as the European Union. In response to its critics, the SPP has added a SPP Myths versus Facts section to its website at www.spp.gov. According to the Myths versus Facts document, the SPP is simply a dialogue among the three countries to enhance prosperity. It goes on to say the SPP is not an agreement, nor is it a treaty. It says no agreement was ever signed. The truth is, on March 23, 2005, President Bush met at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, with Vicente Fox and Paul Martin, then Prime Minister of Canada, in what they called a summit. The three heads of state then drove to Baylor University in Waco, where they issued a press release announcing their signing of an agreement to form the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, the SPP. This year, on March 31, 2006, Bush, Fox, and new Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper met in Cancun, Mexico. This time, their press release celebrated what they called the first anniversary of the SPP. The use of the word dialogue is a carefully selected euphemism designed to make the SPP sound like an innocent discussion among friends. To admit that it is anything more would force the government to provide constitutional justification for its actions. Moreover, the SPP says it won't change our court system or legislative process, and that it respects the sovereignty of each nation, and says the SPP Myths and Facts document, it strongly rejects the idea that it is creating a European Union-like structure. That defense is almost laughable in light of the massive activity taking place in the SPP office located in the Commerce Department. First, one must know that the European Union was also originally sold to the nations on the European continent as simply a trade and security framework. The idea, said proponents, was to create an economic structure to allow a combined European economy to compete with the United States and other economic powerhouses. Only a few years later, nations were told they needed a common currency to provide seamless trade. At the same time, the working groups organizing the EU policy began to morph into what today has become a European Union Parliament, which now is working to create a means of taxation, regulation of commerce, and a court system. Now, in offices buried in the bureaucratic structure of the United States, Canada, and Mexico, 20 working groups are hard at work writing policy initiatives for the SPP, covering a wide range of issues, including the manufacture and movement of goods across the borders of the three North American nations, creating a common energy policy and common environmental regulations over the three nations, regulating e-commerce and information communications and technologies, establishing financial services, including loan policy and foreign aid policy, overseeing business facilitation, creating the rules under which businesses will operate in the three nations, establishing food and agricultural policy, and overseeing transportation and health policy. These policy directives will infringe on every aspect of our lives. Can anyone seriously accept the administration's explanation that nothing really important is going on here? That this is only a friendly discussion taking place? That nothing will change in the way our government operates? If that were so, then why are we doing it? Why are so much time, money, and energy being taken up in an effort that means nothing? The answer, of course, is that lots is going on. It's no accident that the SPP is working out Under Chapter 11 of the NAFTA agreement, a tribunal conducts a behind-closed-doors trial to decide the cases dealing with how state and federal laws may damage NAFTA business. If NAFTA investors believe state or federal laws damage their NAFTA businesses, under the tribunal, the investor may sue the government, and taxpayers will foot the bill. The NAFTA tribunal decision trumps the U.S. courts all the way to the Supreme Court. Yet the Bush administration insists the SPP will have no effect on our court system. The SPP says it is a myth that Congress is not involved or supportive of its actions. The truth is, to date, there has been no legislation passed by Congress to permit its actions. No taxpayer funds have been appropriated. One hearing was held in Senator Richard Lugar's Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It was a friendly affair with friendly dialogue. There's that word again. No tough questions were asked. No one was held accountable for their actions. Meanwhile, members of Congress are beginning to become aware of the SPP activities at the Commerce Department. Representative Tom Tancredo, Republican Colorado, is demanding the Bush administration fully disclose the activities of the SPP, which he says has no authorization from Congress. Specifically, Tancredo wants to know the membership of the SPP working groups. To date, no one knows who is involved or is performing the work to create the policies of the SPP. Jerry Word, who heads the SPP office, told WorldNet Daily that the work has not been disclosed because, quote, we did not want to get the contact people of the working groups distracted by calls from the public. Yet the SPP denies it is working in secret. Additional congressional reaction has come from Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas. He had introduced a bill, the North American Investment Act. Incredibly, the bill contains near exact language from the book by Robert Pastor entitled Toward a North American Community. Pastor's book is largely considered to be the blueprint for the creation of the North American Union. Much of the contents of the book later appeared in a report from the Council on Foreign Relations, CFR, entitled Building a North American Community. That report was issued just a week before the summit in Waco. However, once these facts were demonstrated to Senator Cornyn, he immediately took efforts to assure the Act S.3622, or the North American Investment Act, would not be voted on in the Senate. His spokesman stated that Senator Cornyn is admittedly opposed to any North American Union being formed like the EU had been formed in Europe. Regardless of how the administration spends it, there is no congressional authorization for SPP actions or spending. The SPP denies that it is planning to create a unique currency some have called the Amero, kind of like the Euro. However, on April 6, 2006, the SPP announced the formation of the Financial Services Working Group. According to its own news release, the financial group will focus on enhancing processes for addressing banking, securities, and insurance issues. It goes on to say U.S. financial regulatory agencies will play a critical role in the SPP. In truth, the SPP is being put into place incrementally. It will take years before everything is in place. It took the European Union several years to create the euro. However, the guiding documents from Dr. Pastor's book and the CFR report both call for the creation of a North American currency. It is obvious if one dissects the doublespeak of the bureaucratic language of the SPP in order for it to reach its goal to reduce the cost of trade, combat counterfeiting, and facilitate trade among three nations trying to act as one, the drive for a single currency will not be questioned. And finally, there's the issue of the NAFTA superhighway. NAFTA was the first step in creating a North American Union. It was sold as a means to enhance trade among the North American nations. All were promised greater exports, better jobs, and better wages. In truth, NAFTA is an unmitigated failure for all but a very few. The U.S. trade deficit has soared to almost $1 trillion per year. The U.S. has lost some 1.5 million jobs, and real wages in both the U.S. and Mexico have fallen significantly. Yet the agenda is set, and so our government presses on. The latest objective is the NAFTA superhighway, on which construction is planned to begin next year. It would bisect Texas from its border with Mexico to Oklahoma. It will travel on to Kansas City, where an inland port is now in the final planning stages. About time something happened in Kansas. Plans call for a 10-lane limited-access highway to parallel I-35. It would have three lanes each way for passenger cars, two express lanes each way for trucks, rail lines both ways for people and freight, plus a utility corridor for oil and natural gas pipelines, electric towers, cables for communications, and telephone lines. The highway will require the taking of more than 500,000 acres of private land and is estimated to displace 1 million Americans from their property. Eminent domain will be the tool of choice for the massive land grab, now made easier by last year's Supreme Court ruling in the Kelo case. The Kansas City Smart Port will be literally the first checkpoint on a highway that will run all the way from Colombia through the heartland of the United States. Mexico will have a facility on the KC Smart Port site that it now insists will be Mexican sovereign land. To make the NAFTA superhighway reality, the borders of the three nations must disappear. Immigration will simply become migration. Border laws cannot exist. Harmonizing of our societies is becoming the catchphrase. The SPP says its purpose is to guarantee security and prosperity for the three nations. The NAFTA model has already proven there will be no prosperity. The NAFTA superhighway is proof there can be no security as we pave the way for more illegals to flood the nation, as truckloads of illegal drugs fly up the highway and terrorists just hitch a ride. The United States is the most unique nation on earth. We were created out of a radical idea that free people, with their freedoms protected by the government, would be happy and prosper beyond imagination. The idea worked. Now, the Bush administration is ignoring this historic fact to harmonize us with Canada and especially Mexico, which is not a free country, has no property, and has just proved its unworthiness of conducting free and fair elections. At risk are our culture, our wealth, and the once proud American way of life. Americans must now understand that the battle to stop the North American Union is the last stand for a free and independent United States. That's not a myth. It's the truth. Some Security and Prosperity Partnership documents revealed. Dr. Jerome Corsi and Jim Gilchrist, founder of the Minuteman Project, launched a new website to showcase original documents that they have pried out of the Department of Commerce on the SPP organization, according to an earlier demand filed under the Freedom of Information Act. Under the auspices of the Department of Commerce, the Security and Prosperity Partnership rolls on toward creating a North American Union virtually untouched, but not without at least a few thorns in their side. A new website, www.stopspp.com, was created specifically to release all the documents to the public and in particular to other researchers and writers who are currently investigating the Security and Prosperity Partnership and the proposed North American Union. The site is developed and maintained by the Minutemen Project, whose founder, Jim Gilchrist, is co-author with Corsi of Minutemen, The Battle to Secure America's Borders. Of the 87 SPP documents posted, most are dated from 2005 and thus not particularly timely to current SPP activities, which have been progressing with breakneck intensity. Some corporate representation on various released lists include UPS, FedEx, Ford, Johnson Controls, Merck & Company, Daimler Chrysler, and others. Trade Association representation includes the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Thomas Donahue as president, and the National Association of Manufacturers, John Engler, president and CEO. In spite of a comprehensive and legally presented FOIA request, the Department of Commerce failed to release many more critical documents, meeting schedules and minutes, budgeting documents, initiatives, agreements, letters of intent, and memoranda of understanding. The fact that these documents have not been released within the required time deadline clearly puts the Department of Commerce in direct and willful violation of federal law. Upon even cursory observation of the released documents, one observation is clear. The Security and Prosperity Partnership is a massive undertaking that involves many hundreds of high-level individuals within government and global corporations. As would be expected, these include as many in the private sector as in government. One thing is plainly evident about the SPP. That is, it isn't just some innoxious do-gooder discussion group as suggested by the SPP itself. For all the elected national legislators who have previously feigned ignorance or apathy about SPP, the release of these documents should be a loud wake-up call that their previous foolishness will not be accepted any longer. Our only remaining question at this point is why it takes someone like a Dr. Jerome Corsi to dig this out instead of any number of the tens of thousands of investigative journalists and researchers employed by news services, newspapers, TV networks, etc. around the globe. The newly uncovered Commerce Department documents. Important research material. Judicial Watch just released records obtained under the provisions of the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, from the International Trade Administration of the U.S. Department of Commerce concerning the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. Links to each document are included at the bottom of this press release. Washington, D.C. Judicial Watch, the public interest organization that promotes transparency, accountability, and integrity in government, politics, and the law, today released records obtained under the provisions of the Freedom of Information Act, or the FOIA, from the International Trade Administration of the U.S. Department of Commerce concerning the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. On March 23, 2005, heads of government Vicente Fox, George W. Bush, and Paul Martin launched the North American Partnership at a meeting in Waco, Texas, with the expressed goal of a safer, more prosperous North America. According to the documents, the partnership's working groups include government and business leaders from the United States, Mexico, and Canada who are addressing a variety of topics, including movement of goods between countries, traveler security, energy, environment, and health. Proponents of the partnership claim its purpose is to increase security and prosperity for all three nations through enhanced cooperation. Critics maintain the partnership will sacrifice U.S. sovereignty by establishing a North American Union with open borders and a common currency. The Commerce Department also provided substantial documentation concerning the North American Competitiveness Council. The council consists of 30 members, 10 each from the United States, Mexico, and Canada. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Council of the Americas agreed to jointly lead the U.S. Secretariat. Documents describing the North American Competitiveness Council's launch, its recommendations, and meeting minutes were also uncovered by Judicial Watch's FOIA request, which was filed on August 15, 2006. The Council's recommendations to the North American Partnership include advice on how to handle an international disease outbreak. It is also essential that throughout a pandemic, all borders and major roads remain open. With respect to border enforcement, the Council recommends that a reasonable grace period should be established at border crossings, during which time people lacking documents are educated about their options and allowed to pass. The Council also makes recommendations on energy issues, such as the enhanced integration of the Mexican electricity grid with that of the United States. Many Americans are interested in where this North American partnership process is going, said Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. Given all that is at stake, the federal government has a responsibility to make sure this process is transparent and open to public scrutiny. So the release of these documents is an important step forward. The newly released documents include contact lists, meeting agenda and minutes, recommendations, facts, sheets, speakers, quotes, action items, and procedural guidelines. The records are available on the Judicial Watch Internet site, which is www.judicialwatch.org. And here at the bottom of the document, we have got up to 8 sections of the list to view the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America FOIA documents. Judicial Watch Incorporated is a conservative, nonpartisan educational foundation, promotes transparency, accountability, and integrity in government, politics, and the law. The North American Union, a top goal of the Secretary of Commerce. The North American Union, or AKA Security and Prosperity Partnership, is being administered and championed by the Secretary of Commerce, with help from other cabinet position posts. This article answers the SPP's new defense, that being the SPP myths versus facts, added to their website. Is SPP an executive branch coup d'etat? Secretary of Commerce Carlos Guterres has declared advancing the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America to one of his top goals. Writing in a letter archived on the Department of Commerce website that I have made the SPP one of my top priorities and will utilize the talents and expertise of the people across the Department of Commerce to ensure the SPP is a success. Secretary Guterres began his letter with obvious enthusiasm. I would like to bring your attention to an exciting new initiative that is a high priority for President Bush, me, and the entire Bush administration, the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, the SPP. This initiative was announced on March 23, 2005, by President Bush, President Fox of Mexico, and Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin. It establishes the framework under which the three countries will seek to create a safer and more prosperous North America over the coming years. Secretary Guterres next laid out an explanation of how security and prosperity fit together, using language that carefully language embracing the concept of North America as an economic and political reality. First, Secretary Guterres addressed security. The SPP is built around the two complementary objectives of greater security and prosperity. In the security sphere, we will aim toward a common security strategy focusing on securing North America from external threats, preventing and responding to threats within North America, and streamlining the secure and efficient movement of legitimate and low-risk traffic across our shared borders. Then Secretary Guterres logically moved to prosperity. In the prosperity sphere, the countries will focus on improving productivity, reducing the cost of trade, and enhancing the joint stewardship of our environmental, facilitating agricultural trade while creating a safer and more reliable food supply and protecting our people from disease. This tautological language was designed to present objectives that looked obviously reasonable and important, almost Orwellian in their crafting. It takes attention to detail to note that the security and prosperity definitions virtually demanded our borders with Mexico and Canada be erased, all in the interest of streamlining shared borders and reducing the costs of trade, all the while protecting our environment, our food, and our health. The critical part of Secretary Guterres's letter came next. However, when the Secretary of Commerce explained how trilateral cabinet-level working groups would be created in the three governments with a mission to rewrite a broad array of administrative laws, all to be accomplished strictly within the executive branches of Mexico, Canada, and the United States. Secretary Guterres enters the discussion by bragging about the importance of the role he is assigned to play. Organizationally, I am jointly responsible for the economic or prosperity component of the SPP with my Canadian counterpart, Minister of Industry David Emerson, and my Mexican counterpart, Secretary of Economy Fernando Canales. Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff, jointly with his Canadian and Mexican counterparts, is responsible for the security component. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, jointly with her Canadian and Mexican counterparts, will ensure that the two components are integrated and that the SPP advances our strong relations with Mexico and Canada. This explanation of how the working groups were to be organized and managed proved to be more detailed even than the explanation given on SPP.gov, the website Secretary Guterres created within the Department of Commerce to manage this new trilateral initiative. Nowhere in the letter does Secretary Guterres make any reference to the U.S. Congress. Instead, he invites inquiries to Gary Word, who works within the International Trade Administration, the ITA, office of the Department of Commerce, giving out her phone number as 202-482-1545 and her email as jerry_word@ita.doc.gov. A new myths versus facts addendum has been added to the SPP.gov website, representing an attempt to deflect criticism. Here, the Department of Commerce attempts to discredit the myth that the SPP was an agreement signed by Presidents Bush and his Mexican and Canadian counterparts in Waco, Texas, on March 23, 2005. In the fact response, SPP.gov openly admits that the SPP declared in Waco on that date was little more than a press release. The SPP is a dialogue to increase security and enhance prosperity among the three countries. The SPP is not an agreement, nor is it a treaty. In fact, no agreement was ever signed. The goal of the myth versus fact seems to be to reposition the entire SPP process as a mere dialogue. If the Department of Commerce were to openly admit that SPP.gov is rewriting U.S. administrative law, Secretary Guterres would need some the constitutional justification to underpin his enthusiasm for combining with Mexico and Canada. Are we to seriously believe that pure dialogue and exchange of intellectually challenging trilateral ideas is the reason Secretary Guterres has boasted that advancing SPP is one of the most important objectives of his office? Working groups rewriting U.S. administrative laws in areas ranging from e-commerce to steel policy to energy policy to aviation control to border crossing policy to environment, to mention just a few, are arguably creating the legal infrastructure for a regional government to emerge by administrative fiat. Yet there is no provision in the U.S. Constitution that justifies the executive branch to rewrite U.S. administrative law without formulating a treaty that must be submitted to the Senate for ratification by a two-thirds vote. These are the cold realities Secretary Guterres and SPP.gov seek to sidestep with their reassuring security and prosperity platitudes. Robert Pastor, the American University professor who is the leading contender for the title Father of the North American Union, has provided much of the intellectual arguments for the logic underlying SPP. Pastor has argued for an incremental process of creating a North American Union, beginning with a dialogue that sounds uncomfortably like the politically correct definition of its mission as presented by SPP.gov itself. Pastor, in an article entitled NAFTA is Not Enough, argued for an incremental process that could head toward the creation of the NAU, all the while providing cover for participating politicians and governments to deny that creating the NAU was their goal. In this essay, Pastor wrote, an NAU would be the North American Union, not Northern Arizona University. Europe has struggled with these questions for nearly 50 years, and its members still have not clearly decided on their destination. NAFTA is only 8 years old, and its project from the beginning was much more modest than the EU's. While the three governments of North America are unlikely to step into the debate on long-term goals at the current time, non-governmental organizations, research institutes, and universities should fill the void with new ideas and old-fashioned cross-border dialogue. Pastor begins the next paragraph by advising the likely path the three governments are to take is the status quo with modest adjustments. He concludes the paragraph by commenting, all three governments could surprise themselves by taking a great leap forward, but this seems possible only if there is a dramatic crisis of some kind. Dr. Pastor seems to prescribe that a fear formula is all that is needed for the American people need to begin begging SPP to produce the NAU right now. Pastor openly writes as if the next 9/11 terrorist attack or a future outbreak of some health epidemic, such as the avian flu, could be just what the NAU doctor ordered as the prescription for the American people to abandon sovereignty in favor of super-regional government control, all in the interest of security, leading to prosperity. Or is it prosperity which necessitates more security via surrender to Big Brother government? Folks, just to get off of this for a second, there in previous archives you can find how the executive branch of our government has passed illegally through the back door and the Supreme Court the different acts that remove power under any kind of emergency it removes power from all the branches of the government except the executive. Now, everything from relocating people, taking over energy sources, they can access your home, they can do anything they want. The borders, the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, you name it, the whole thing is taken over entirely by the executive branch, depending on what they determine to be an emergency. And all of these things have already a bunch of power has been taken away and put into the executive branch of government solely. And this has been done secretively with these different bills that have been tacked on and everything else. And the whole thing's legal as far as government's concerned. And this is one of the reasons why there's these big outrages. And the president has the ability to make these massive decisions, because the power is removed from government except for the executive branch, as long as the executive branch deems that there is some sort of emergency situation. And folks, there is always going to be something that's going to be construed as an emergency situation by the executive branch of our government, as long as this earth is turning. Everything is going to wind up being some type of a emergency situation, from the avian bird flu, the war in Iraq, the terrorist attacks, which are staged by that executive branch, the borders, our economy, I mean, you name it. The list goes on and on and on forever. Okay, the media, you know, was considered a security problem, and now all of a sudden they've got a right to you know, search everybody. You see what I'm saying? There is always going to be an emergency. Now, you can look in the archives of the show here and see that there are different bills that were passed. They're e-bills, executive bills, that take away all of this freedom from us, everything from the food, you know, the process of it, the machinery, you name it. I mean, you don't have a right to spit in the wrong direction when the whole thing's said and done. And now what we have here is all of the spokes coming together to make the whole wheel. And you can see now, as time is going on, how these elite organizations and lawmakers and those who control the economy and those who pull the strings. Because, folks, if you want to know how the stock market goes up or down, that is decided. You know, that is decided. I mean, the entire stock market can be swayed simply by the choice of one man or his group. You know, it's either going to flourish or it's going to go down or whatever, you name it. Countries can be made or broken by these groups of men all working toward the same global agenda. And folks, when these people are global, there's no national allegiance anymore. When you become global like these men, like these entities, there is no longer a nation that you are holding allegiance to. You know, what do you care if one, you know, nation goes kaput or turns into something else that it never used to be? I mean, they're, you know, the minds of these people are bent on progression, are bent on changing history, on creating something that's never been created, on ruling the world. You know, this has been going on since the beginning, you know. The world was given to Adam, you know, and here the devil comes along and, you know, now he is running the world, you know, and he's doing everything he can to conquer the world and to rule it and to get everybody all on one page, so that all he has to do is be the top guy of the MLM. Now, this is very interesting, but if there is a security issue, people believe that with a North American Union, that's going to give our government and our army the right to cover the borders all the way around the entire three countries of Canada, United States, and Mexico. We no longer have to cover our Canadian border or our Mexican border. All we got to do is send the Coast Guard out around the entire area and not worry about anything in between. And everybody would believe that that would be a more secure environment. So, obviously, there's going to be some catalyst in there, and the people are going to be played again. And that's what they're predicting as it is. And that's the same tool that's been used by the elite to push their agenda and to sway the people. And the same way that you know, Pearl Harbor was known that was going to go down. I mean, the amount of things that people would have had to the whole thing would have had to been run by grade schoolers in order to miss the fact that Pearl Harbor was about to happen. And it wasn't grade schoolers. It was professionals. People knew Pearl Harbor was going down. And they allowed it to go down because it was the key we needed. It was the emotional catalyst of the American people for everybody to jump on, join the army, and get out there and go plant some more embassies and take over other countries and integrate and quote, unite, you know, or whatever. Now I guess what the president's looking at is Operation, it was Operation Iraqi Freedom, you know. Now it's Operation Iran Freedom, you know. As long as we can handle the little guy, then it's all in the name of freedom. You know, well, hey, China's been communist for years. You know, Russia's been communist for years. How come we ain't doing some kind of Russian, you know, or China freedom? Because, you know, that's too big for our britches right now, you know. I mean, that's too much. We can't bite that off and chew it. But, you know, we can do little bits at a time. And if we join up with these other cats, you know, and we all drag them into the boat, then, you know, it'll increase our army and whatnot. And then the whole thing's just going to turn into one big global nightmare. Now, you know, we have given Israel is requesting our permission to fly over Iraq because now we own the place, and so that they can go and bomb Iran. You know, I mean, what's it take for people to recognize what's going on? You know, do we have to look in history books for very long to discover this? 100 years from now, are they going to look back at history and recognize, finally? How come we can't do that now? How come people just can't open up and see their eyes and watch history being made as it's being made? I don't know what it takes. It takes some kind of crisis, apparently. Dr. Pastor seems to prescribe that a fear formula is all that is needed for the American people to need to begin begging SPP to produce the NAU right now. Now, the Bible also states the peace and security is what they will be saying, and the end will suddenly come upon them. Now, 1988, folks, that was a few years ago now, the Pope, John Paul, said and declared, quote, that the year 1988 was a year of peace and security. maybe this guy isn't reading his Bible. But you would think that the Pope would not make that statement simply for the purpose of not fulfilling the prophecy. And the Bible states that it is the world which will be stating that peace and security. And then the end shall be upon them. So here we've got the Pope, most religious man on the planet, you would think, making that statement. But if you do some research about the Pope and the Vatican and Catholicism, etc., you will see that it's really nothing more than an Illuminati. And it's very blatant. So, now here, what are the words that are being used with the North American Union? Security and prosperity. Peace and security. Now, granted, the word prosperity and peace are not exactly the same, but you would believe that prosperity would be the opposite of depravity, which would be war. And therefore, prosperity and peace are pretty much hand in hand here, and we've got the word security just right there. So, folks, keep your eyes open. Disinformation and deniability are the two key concepts of the SPP modus operandi. We have to look no further than the myth versus facts debunking document recently posted on the SPP.gov website to see the anticipated denial. The SPP in no way, shape, or form considers the creation of a European Union-like structure or a common currency. The SPP does not attempt to modify our sovereignty or currency or change the American system of government designed by our founding fathers. Now, granted, people, they can make this statement as long as the SPP is, quote, a non-document. This is kind of like people who are arrested and have to do prison time because they have several wives, and it is documented as their wives. However, you've got people out there in the world who are shacking up with 10 different people a year, or bringing a different person home with them every weekend, and they're not being arrested. You've got people who are in clubs who are having relations with dozens of people simultaneously, and nobody arrests them because it is not documented. They're not punished for something because there's no documentation. Here we've got the same basic thing going on. We've got the United States, Mexico, and Canada all in bed together, but there's no documentation. And as long as there's no documentation, then there's no liability, and nobody's getting busted. And you can say things like, the SPP in no way, shape, or form considers the creation of a European Union-like structure or common currency. The SPP does not attempt to modify our sovereignty or currency or change the American system of government designed by our founding fathers. You can say everything you want because nothing is in writing. If SPP.gov is not aimed at a massive rewrite of the U.S. administrative law in a trilateral, harmonized, and integrated format, then why not just shut SPP.gov down? As Robert Pastor pointed out, dialogue can occur within universities. Reading the SPP.gov attempt at denial, we are reminded of René Magritte's famous painting entitled Ce n'est pas un pipe. When the dialogue begins to take place in cabinet-level trilateral executive branch committees, patriots are well advised to be concerned that an executive branch coup d'etat may be underway, all in the name of a North American trilateral partnership devoted to nothing more than security and prosperity. Or as Aldous Huxley might ask, would someone please pass the Soma? Bush signs a $286 billion highway bill. One might expect pork from politicians, but this bill shows a globalist twist. Bush signed the bill at a Caterpillar Incorporated facility in Montgomery, Illinois. Caterpillar is a globalist player of the first order. We won't wonder too hard at what Caterpillar's lobbyists might have been up to in Washington this year. There was a big shindig at Caterpillar's largest manufacturing facility located in Montgomery, Illinois, that involves over $250 billion. After speeches and accolades, President Bush signed into law H.R. 3, the Transportation Equity Act. This $286 billion bill promises plenty of pork for all, with some 6,000 pet projects attached to the legislation. Bush announced, "I'm here to sign the highway bill because I believe by signing this bill, when it's fully implemented, there is going to be more demand for the machines you make here." President Bush further stated, "You can't expect your farmers to be able to get goods to market if we don't have a good road system." He said, "You can't expect to get these Caterpillar products all around the United States if we don't have a good road system." What's wrong with this picture? Caterpillar can't move its products without a better road system that can only be built with its equipment in the first place. Caterpillar's sentiments were certainly elevated as its group vice president Gary Shaheen proclaimed, "On behalf of our Caterpillar customers, I'd like to thank the president, Speaker Hastert, and all those who made this day possible. With this bill, our customers will now have certainty to make business plans and to prepare to get to work on the projects that provide jobs and improve the lives of all Americans who benefit from improved highways, roads, and bridges." When Shaheen pronounces the words "our customers," he means the hundreds of government agencies and contractors that are going to shower Caterpillar with cold, hard cash over the next few years. Further research is required to determine any specific role Caterpillar had in creating H.R. 3, but the circumstantial evidence presented by this signing party indicates that a very close connection exists. This is an example of the money laundry where governments are incited to spend by the same companies who want it to be spent on them. It should be noted that the Montgomery plant is located in House Speaker Denny Hassert's 14th Congressional District. Question: should Caterpillar Incorporated be allowed to lobby for a $286 billion highway bill when it is obvious that it is a major beneficiary of any resulting spending? Question: are Hassert and Bush displaying poor taste in showcasing H.R. 3 at the largest Caterpillar Incorporated plant in the nation? We're going to take a look at the North American Union and take a look at the map if we can. There's a lot of different websites that you can go to kind of take a look at some of these things. One of them is the Judicial Watch, which is a Washington, D.C. based entity that one is above the law. You got a group of lawyers there who are basically keeping an eye. And probably making some cash on lawsuits from the government. And here in the Judicial Watch, we've got release USDA documents on food safety, emergency preparedness, and regulations from Security and Prosperity Partnership. They've got a map also that kind of shows the three countries all being linked here. It says the Washington, D.C. Judicial Watch, the public interest group that investigates and prosecutes government corruption, today released documents obtained under the provision of the Freedom of Information Act from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, concerning the Foreign Agricultural Services involvement with the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, the SPP. The records released November 2006 detailed the U.S., Canadian, Mexican members of the Trilateral Task Force, as well as contact information for all parties. Overall issues for the Trilateral Task Force are enumerated to include detailed charts listing individual objectives, departments, milestones, deliverables, and timelines for completion. The issues and objectives of the SPP Trilateral Task Force are sweeping. A sampling of these subjects include food safety, nutrition, drugs, biologics, medical devices, compliance enforcement, combating health fraud, veterinary products, pesticide use, plant pest and disease issues, meat, poultry, and processed egg products, food packaging and labeling standards, food additives and contaminants, fish and seafood products, as well as dairy, fruits, vegetables, and processed foods, just to name a few. The deliverables and timetables for the SPP Trilateral Task Force include specific processes, reports, and the establishment of laboratory working groups dating from June 2005 through March 2007. These documents show the complexity and intricate nature of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, said Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. Judicial Watch seeks transparency and openness in the partnership so that Americans can come to informed conclusions about the activities of their government and its bureaucracies. Previously, Judicial Watch released documents obtained under FOIA, or the Freedom of Information Act, from the Internal Trade Administration of the U.S. Department of Commerce concerning the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. Commerce Department also provided substantial documentation concerning the North American Competitiveness Council, which consists of 30 members, 10 each from the United States, Mexico, and Canada. On March 23, 2005, heads of government Vicente Fox, George Bush, and Paul Martin launched the North American Partnership at a meeting in Waco, Texas, with the expressed goal of a safer, more prosperous North America. Critics, however, maintain the partnership may ultimately undermine U.S. sovereignty by establishing a North American union with open borders and a common currency. Click here to view the documents. So here you've got basically all of the different docs that go into what we've discussed on this website, which you can go to www.judicialwatch.org. This is one of the organizations that currently is claiming to keep its eye on the different government entities and keeping everybody abreast. There's also another website that you might want to look at that gets into the ins and outs of some of the secretive things that the government is doing. I'm taking a look to see if I could find it right now, just for your information. WorldNet Daily is another news type of website that gets into some of the different topics that we discuss. They're probably a little bit less in-depth, and they're extremely conservative. So it's kind of like watching the O'Reilly Factor, if you have seen the show. And that website is www.wnd.com. WND standing for the World News, or World Net Daily. So that's the name of their newspaper, or their e-news paper, if you will. You can also go to remnantradio.org and take a look at the links there and work your way through the links that are attached to the links to do some of your own research regarding the hidden agendas that our government and the governments of the world are all involved in. This particular show is the whole purpose behind this particular show is because I want anybody who is listening to recognize how this ties into what the Bible has told us is going to happen. There is a lot of controversy that is swept under the rug in the Christian church today, and that is whether the United States is going to be considered a righteous nation in the end, because there is some reference in the scriptures as to how the nations shall be judged. Yet I want you folks to also recognize that the scriptures speak of the followers of Christ, and ever since Old Testament times, Peter gives reference to this, Peter or Paul, and it is about being a pilgrim on this earth. So while some of the churches really concerned about, you know, getting the United States back to its grassroots and back to its biblical foundations, this is a good cause, folks. This is the church acting as a restrainer, and God is honoring that. We are called to, you know, defend the innocent and the widows and orphans, and our scriptures gives us these things to do because they are fruit of what God has given within us. However, regardless of that, the scriptures also say that that all nations are going to be coming against Israel, and I don't know what this whole, you know, in the end, I mean, there's not going to be, you know, all nations except the United States. I mean, there's really not a whole lot of reference to that. There's argument there, though, like I said. So my point is just be aware that as much faith as we put in this country, you know, and as much faith as Christians in general, I should say, put in this country on being a Christian nation and the freedom, etc., folks, you're missing half of the picture at least here, or more of it. Our freedoms to be church are limited. And in order to limit what we speak of and what we speak against, they have paid off the church. The government has paid off the church with a nonprofit status and a tax freedom. It's hush money, folks. And if you don't want to accept the hush money, like some people have, these small groups, they'll take you out. You know, it depends on how much of a zealot you are, really. If you're very zealous about revealing what's going on and you start getting out of hand, I mean, the government is you know, full of elite people. Once it starts getting uncomfortable for them, they will do something about it. The same way that they do something about other countries and going to war and creating, you know, our own wars and our own agendas, depending on how it plays out. It's a large chess game, you know. It's the truth is, the government is still the world. You know, this is not a Christian government in this country. There is one government, and that is God's government, that is flawless. So for so many Christians to be relying upon the United States government and just taking for granted that the FDA is, you know, is passing healthy food and that they're passing, you know, healthy drugs and all this other kind of stuff, folks, you need to recognize that there's more disease now and there's more problems and outbreaks now than ever. You know, the more we advance, the more we die. It's the people who, health-wise, are following God's way that are getting healthier and staying away from, you know, what everything the FDA and all the food that is processed and packaged on our shelves is doing to us. There is a massive control going on here. You know, there are people who are not that stupid that are running things. They have a lot of information and they know what's going on, but there is cash involved here, and that sways the whole thing. A perfectly honest man will become corrupted as soon as you throw money at him. It's the anti-Christ. It's the anti-God. There's two things that the scriptures talk about. One is God and one is mammon. And mammon is money. I want you to recognize that in this entire show today, we're talking about the North American Union, or the foundation of the North American Union, which began with the NAFTA agreement and has moved on to the SPP, and eventually, even though they're denying it now, will become the NAU. Whether, you know, you want to believe it or not, economy is a kingdom. You know, a banking system is a kingdom. And if that one thing is united between these three countries, then we have a kingdom that is ruling all three of them. It is one economic kingdom, just like a religion is a kingdom. It spans continents. It's global. It's worldwide. There's no national allegiance anymore. But I want you to recognize the words that are being used here are security and prosperity. Now, do you hear fear in there anywhere? Can you hear fear in there anywhere? Is there an element of fear behind that? How about security? Okay. It's pretty easy he is using language of fear here. Security. That would indicate that there is insecurity, or that they are playing on people's insecurities, whether they be legitimate or not. It's a tool that's being used, which is the fear of people. What's the other thing that they're talking about? Prosperity. What emotion does prosperity appeal to? How about this? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Do you see any desire for prosperity in that prayer? You know? No. They're happy, they're content. So the government obviously is this entire thing is obviously not a spiritual foundation. This whole thing reeks of the usage of fear. Prosperity. That sounds to me like afraid you won't have something, or afraid you're going to lose what you have. These are two major fears if you do Psych 101. One is fear that you won't get what you want. The other one is fear that you are going to lose what you do have. And prosperity, the promise of prosperity, quenches both of those fears, which are two major human fears. We'll take a look at the fears real quick. Some preacher that I won't mention has a sermon. One of his sermons are the seven fears. We're going to take a look at what his seven fears are. Not that all of his teachings are agreeable with everybody, but these seven fears, number one is the unknown. Number two is death, the fear of death. Now I can see already how both of these fears can be played into the acceptance of the North American Union. Number three is the fear of man, or man's opinion. Number four is the fear of failure. Number five, the fear of betrayal. Number six is the fear of sickness. And number seven, the fear of lack, which also would include the fear of loss. So here you've got these fears that you can go through, and you can see how our government has made many of its decisions based on the fear of man, allowing certain selfish agendas and evil agendas to take legal precedence over morality and values because of the fear of what that particular small group is going to say or is going to think about them. You know, there was a time when there were men running the country, or men were involved in government. So take a look, do some research, recognize the fruits of the tree, and don't fear. If you fear, we had a brief discussion about this today, you're giving in to the plan. You're becoming part of the plan, of the enemy's plan. You've already lost. you can think of anything else, please send us an email and let me know. But the two weapons, the two tools, I should say, that the devil uses to my knowledge are fear. That's a big one. And the other one is lust. I mean, you think about the sins that mankind has. We've got three categories of sins that Jesus talks about: the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. Well, two-thirds of these have the word lust in it, just like the word luster, or something that's shiny, like lucent or Lucifer, something bright. So lust and Lucifer are the same. This is what Satan did when he was in heaven. And to this day, this is what he's doing. Here you've got the same words: prosperity, security, and prosperity. Oh yeah. Fear and lust. Fear and lust. Same thing, same story all the time. You just have to recognize its many different faces and recognize that just because it's the United States of America doesn't mean that it is any longer ran by the same people. I mean, we do not have an educational system that is using the Bible as a textbook anymore. That was done away with in secretive back rooms behind our backs, under our noses. And we didn't have to lift a finger to let it happen. You know, there's going to be a judgment day, and I don't know exactly what's going to happen to each and every one of us, but I do know that, as we talked about earlier today, God is going to be judging our hearts, and that in itself is enough to cause me alarm. I mean, I'm grateful that God's not going to judge, you know, me by some of my stupid actions, you know. But he's going to judge me by my heart because he knows that I'm going to sin because I'm a sinner. But, you know, we have to be led by the Spirit to do what God calls us to do according to his government, according to his law. And that, ultimately, is the words in red, the New Testament. You know, I have all the respect in the world for the Old Testament. But for people who are still stuck in that, you have not recognized Christ. You have not recognized the power that he gives us over fear and over lust. This is our focus as Christians. Our Bible is the New Testament, not the Old. You know, we have been broken. We get examples. We get a lot of great stories from the Old Testament. But folks, we're not supposed to be under fear and, you know, under this non-spirit-led type of system. You know, we have to, non-Holy Spirit-led system. It, you know, the system of this government in the world is certainly spirit-led, but it has nothing to do with holiness. These are demonic spirits. What we need to do is we need to focus on the fact that we don't even belong here. You know, being realistic is ridiculous, because this country, this world, isn't even our home. And to believe that everybody else out there is corrupt except the United States of America is about the biggest joke that I could possibly imagine. And this is what a lot of Christians are doing nowadays. They're not recognizing that our own government is probably one of the most corrupt governments on the planet, stemming from ancient times, ancient civilizations. The same spirits that were pulling the strings of the king in Babylon and pulling the strings of the king in Egypt, the same spirits are alive and well today. Just because the men died or the country went under doesn't mean that the demons went with it. They're still here, folks, and they're smarter and smarter and smarter. And they wave red, white, and blue flags, my friend. They wave French flags. They wave, you know, Mexican flags. They do it all. They're everywhere. This isn't about, you know, whether, you know, our country is righteous or not. You know, I mean, it's good to restrain, as we're called to do, but you need to also recognize that it's going down. You know, fight while you're here, because you're going to be judged by your heart. You know, or if you're still here, you'll be judged by your deeds later. But you know, don't believe that the government is you know, incorruptible, or that we're, you know, all people are inherently good. You know, this United States of America is in bed with the devil. I mean, other countries call this country the Great Satan. Do you think they're all just a bunch of cavemen over there? They all just decided to come up with this lingo? You don't think there's anyone intelligent on the other side of the earth? You really think that, you know, the United States is the only place where intelligent people come from, or theologians or anything like that? You're wrong. You know, there's highly intelligent people on other parts of the earth. They're calling this the Great Satan for a pretty dang good reason. It's something that shouldn't be mocked. It's something that should be considered. You know, it's good for us to get involved and to try to, you know, fight where we can, or reveal, or shed some light, or sprinkle some salt. You know, that's what we're called to do. But don't put your faith in a worldly system, a worldly government, because anything that's of man is evil. You know, man's heart is the root of evil. We have to be led by the Spirit of God. We have to be born again. And if it's anything besides that, folks, you know, don't hold any allegiance to it. You know, we got one government. We have one king, folks. You know, our king, he doesn't wave a red, white, and blue flag. You know, that's something that we need to focus on, something that we need to recognize. While we need to try to combat evil, you know, we can't just lift or throw our arms up in the air and say, okay, you know, it's all good now. We got to see the enemy for who he is. Well, with that being said, do we have Pilgrim on the line?
Yes, sir. You there?
Yes, sir. I was just taking a sip of my tea. Well, we were discussing a little bit of earlier leaning out, you know, your life and getting ready for whatever might take place. There's heresy, if you will, or opinions, you name it. I've heard dates coming out of different religious leaders from 2007 all the way to 2020. And these all seem to be somewhere in that range, 2007, 2008, I've heard 2012, and I've heard 2020, or 2020. So in this whole area, all of these developments that are taking place, I knew something was going to happen when we hit the 2000s, because people for, you know, 50 years or more have been thinking, oh man, by the year 2000, we're going to be riding around in hovercraft, and there's going to be people movers downtown, you know, and all this other kind of stuff, and it hasn't happened. So to me, I am sensing an urgency worldwide for massive reformation, just simply because of the date, you know, the 2000 thing. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a mental play that's happened to people. You know, it's the year 2000, now we're going into 2007, pretty soon it'll be 2010, 2020, you know, and we're still riding around, you know, burning fossil fuels, and this is just, you know, unacceptable behavior. So people are making these huge strides nowadays to try to create some type of a, you know, space age type of technology, environment, legal system, national awareness, you name it, you know, freedom, homosexual freedom, you know, you name it. Do you see anything like that, or what do you feel about that, brother? Do you think people are pushing towards an urgency to have some type of globalization or change?
Oh, well, globalization is here, and it's, you know, it's you know, it's getting more pronounced all the time. I think that as relates to times and dates, I think that by 2012 this thing is going to pretty much come to its head. That's what I think. So
why 2012? Is that a dream or
no? 2012 is kind of like a date that's mystical amongst the secret societies and such.
Oh, so they've done some forecasting amongst their witches and whatnot, huh?
Well, yeah, it's not forecasting amongst witches that are current. It's all part of the calendars and dates.
The numerical thing?
Of civilizations past. That have continued to today, you know, through the literature and archaeological study and so forth. I think that it coincides with the all of this globalization, all the stuff that's going on now. We've never seen a time like this where the whole world could be united as one. We've never had that capability on the planet. It's never been here before. This is the first time in all of history that they've had the technology to unite the Earth. And I think that this is the culmination of the ages of time of events, as relates probably to the book of Revelation and other scriptures. So we have the world government in effect right now without formal announcement as an organization as such, but it is in effect right now as we speak. All governments across the land, with the exception of probably Iran, is under control of secret societies, of Freemasons, of the World Satanic powers. Iran is probably the only exception at the moment. Once they have sieged that country, they can then unite the whole world together. All countries are already under the control, including China. Some believe that the Chinese are going to war against this and that and the other because of scripture. No, China has already come under control, as well as Russia, as well as the United States, Britain, all of Europe. Iraq has now been taken over. The Afghans, you know, all of those nations over there, except Iran is the only one left.
What about South Korea?
Koreans have to.
That's kind of part of the whole China wad there.
Yeah. I mean, it may seem like, you know, I mean, you know, I've heard it said that at any given time there's like 50 or, you know, 100 wars going on at once around the globe. And it's true. I mean, you know, there's going to be skirmishes and things like that. But the nation's leaders are what I'm talking about, have accepted the one world government plan secretly from the people. Just as it's been kept from the American public in this country, it's been kept from the publics in the other countries as well. They don't know what's going on, just like we don't know what's going on, because it's secret. These are secret plans, but the leaders of every country have bowed and decreed to the one world order secretly. And so because of that, they are at the right time, at the right place, will give their allegiances completely, publicly, if necessary.
Well, already their actions are proving that they have no national allegiance anymore.
Yes, that's right.
They just haven't put it on paper, as in this scenario, which is a typical case scenario now that we're finding out, that, hey, as long as you don't have anything in writing, they can't hold you to nothing.
Right.
But it doesn't stop them from going through the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once it just becomes a part of life or a part of society that, hey, this is what's going on, this is what we're doing, then after the people accept it, then they sign it on in and, you know, it passes as a sub portion of some bill or something somewhere. And it, you know, it just becomes part of the norm and is never, you know, fought against or anything, you know.
That's right.
People who raise Cain about it or who make, you know, public awareness of it and stuff are, you know, deemed lunatics. They're not given any time on the radio because the media has already been under control for a century, you know.
Well, the media has been under control ever since it was created.
Exactly.
It's never been in the hands of the people, ever. When you go back to it, this country was really taken over in 1776. 1776 was the destruction of our country. That is when it went under Freemason control altogether. Was with the creation of the U.S. government. Before that, this nation consisted primarily of free people. It was the creation of the U.S. government that brought it under control,
right,
and put it right back under the same people that had already taken over most of Europe at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So English rule and all of that. So the Declaration of Independence and all that, baloney. I mean, you know, people want to go back to that, but that was done away. This country actually went under Freemasonic control in 1776, which was still centered out of Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was no longer an autonomous nation.
You recall the one show that I did about all the different executive orders?
Well, yeah. Executive orders are mostly kept secret.
Like vehicle.
Well, they're kept secret from the people. We don't even know. They are secret. We don't even know what's in them. So this is a secret control from the people of their destinies, of this nation.
You know, and where else is there? I'm sure you can watch from the moment of the discovery of this country here, from Columbus, I'm sure you can watch as the elite organizations came in from the get-go and began establishing, you know, the order, you know, behind everything. I mean, but it's not written in any kind of history book that you're ever going to find in school.
Well, of course not.
Yeah, they don't. That history is not because it's a, you know, it's an illegal course of action.
Yes.
So you're never going to find that, but you know, unless you do like some searching, you know.
No, what's taught in school is complete allegiance to the Freemasonic order.
Right.
The Pledge of Allegiance, which we've all been. We all did when we went to public school every day. We did the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Is a dictatorship,
right?
And when the Pledge of Allegiance was first created, and we have a program in Remnant Radio about this, the children actually saluted in a Nazi style salute to the flag.
Really?
Oh yes, the Nazi style salute was later done away with. And replaced with the hand over the heart, but it used to be that. Well, we're not to pledge allegiance to anything but our Creator.
And you know, that's why the Jehovah's Witnesses refuse, you know, to pledge allegiance to the flag. I always had a strong belief in agreement with that, even though I knew in my spirit that, you know, the cult itself was full of flaws, you know.
Yes.
But I remember growing up, I was not allowed as a witness to salute the flag, you know, or pledge
allegiance
to the flag. And it always was something that I agreed with.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know why, but I just couldn't see putting a country above God.
Well,
and I could never, you know, I could never agree to do that.
It would even be one thing if it was the country, but it's not. What you're pledging allegiance to is not the country.
You're pledging it to the corporation of the United States.
You're pledging it to the Freemasonic Society,
right?
Which is in itself a satanic cult,
right?
And that's the United States flag is a symbol of this control. You see, it's not. People take that U.S. flag and they to them, to the ordinary average Joe, it's a symbol for this country.
Right.
But that is not what they have instituted it as.
Right.
It is their symbol of Illuminati control.
Right.
Okay. That is why when they go to any exploration lengths, they place that flag on a place they just, you know, like we. Go to the moon and they put the flag on the moon.
Right.
Well, that is their marker, this Illuminati that they're taking over this
right.
area. Okay. So that's what the U.S. flag indeed really is, and it probably now could be extended to every flag of every country in the world. Is the same way. These flags, they do not any longer represent the country. They represent these orders.
Right. It's more like the United Nations. I mean, so many people thought that the UN was, you know, what do you call it? The countries that were all going to unite in the end days, you know, and since then we've also got the EU.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at a North American Union. I mean, you know, there's groups of nations to where it's all becoming corporate.
Right.
Here you've got this.
Well, this is a larger step to the ultimate one world rule.
Right. Until eventually all the corporations are going to incorporate.
Yes. Well, we see. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we see that from a local basis on up to a global basis, how that companies swallow up smaller companies, become larger and larger and larger, until there's only one big corporation that controls a particular thing or an industry or market.
Or the world.
And eventually those merge in with another big one from another interest, and then until you've got two or three, and then it finally goes to one. So, yes, it will eventually go to one huge monster name, okay, that everybody will recognize. But it really truly is already in effect, but it's secret.
And, you know, the forces, which are invisible, but we can see the fruit, are uniting the kingdoms. When I was going through my Revelation studies, and I recognized that the beast had all these heads, but he had more horns than he had heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I recognized that these horns were not just, you know, countries or whatever, but kingdoms. Now, when you've got a monetary system, which is a kingdom, I mean, economy is a power that is controlled by people that affects the entire world, but it's not a country. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This is a kingdom of economy here.
Well, you can think of it this way too, and it's I put this to your consideration, that they could also be branches of the same we call it Illuminati. Illuminati is only part of the problem, but it's the secret society control, which has many, many branches.
Indeed.
Okay, and could not these symbolisms be that instead of countries, nations, or kingdoms? They could be simply branches of this one world conspiracy.
Well, I think it's the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
Certain branches is, I mean, it's all, you know, depending on how you view it, it's all being controlled, whether some of the people realize it or not. And another one of these kingdoms is religion. Now, the reason I mention banking and religion is because these are powerful country-swaying forces that can make or break a country. I mean, men will follow a religious principle regardless of how much wealth, you know, could sway them. A belief is stronger than cash. You know what I mean? This is a very powerful force, religion. And men can be on the false track, but their faith is enough to make them go all the way to a suicide or a homicide or mass genocide, you know. But what these, you can see that the spirits, the forces behind these kingdoms are operating toward global unity as well, both in finance and in religion. You know, the religious group of all the religious leaders of the world, they get together, you know, at this round table of the World Religious Leaders Organization or whatever it is, you know, and they talk about certain things, and there's all this hubbub about, you know, developing a one world religion. And with that in place, I mean, everybody, it comes under the control of one organization or of one man. And the same thing with money, you know, if it's all one system. Look at the peso. You used to be able to get 100 pesos for a buck. One peso was a penny. And now it's 10 pesos for a buck. And from what I heard, we're at 9. So Mexico already is getting closer and closer. We're going to develop one currency here. And then eventually, when you've only got, you know, three or four or five big kids on the block left, and they're all corporations of smaller countries and entities, you know, a couple of them are going to incorporate. And then again, you know, whatever, until finally it's going to be, and I mean, people are making massive strides is what I'm seeing, because they've got this mental block that tells them, oh my gosh, we're in the year 2000, we're supposed to be floating around on spaceships, we're supposed to be doing this or that, you know, we're supposed to not have wars at this point, you know, we should be much further along here. And so they're taking these great big strides to try to solve the world's problem and globalize, and the computer alone is, I mean, you know, assisting that whole operation, to where men are thinking that they're going to be their own saviors and everything else, you know, the Bible talks about, and they're going to rule out God. You know, they're going to scoff at God. And they're going to say, when they finally reach a certain point, they're going to say, you know what? The only ones who aren't going with the plan are these born-again Christians. You know, they're a thorn in our side here. They're a stone in our shoe, and we need to get rid of them, because they're the only ones who are saying that this is all, you know, that we still need God, and that we're not the masters of our own destiny. Look what we've accomplished, you know. And it's the whole Satan thing over again. Like, you know, we talk about it. It's always the same story. It's just a different face, you know. Same guy, different mask. But always the same agenda. You can recognize it by the fruit.
Well, it's the same agenda, because the master of the conspiracy is immortal.
And throughout generations in history, that's why they say history repeats itself.
Yes.
If that's the case, folks, then World War II was nothing.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
We had World War I, we've had World War II, World War III is coming.
Well, you know? And they didn't call World War II World War II until after. When World War II started, it was never billed as a world war. You didn't get that dub till later.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, we could already be in World War III right now and don't even know it as such.
I certainly believe that.
What
was the time span between the first two World Wars?
Well, the first one was in the teens.
1914.
Yeah, and the second one started around 1940. One, something like that. So
it was 34, wasn't it? Or maybe I'm wrong. 43?
I think it started in 41.
41.
Yeah,
41.
It was right around 1941 there somewhere. And
right.
And it ended in 45.
14 and 41.
Yeah.
Between 14 and 41. You're looking at, you know, 35 years in between. And now it's been, you know, a lot longer than that since 1945. We're looking at 60 years. Almost twice as long. Going into a new millennium, I mean, it's the whole Iraq thing, you know, I mean, like you said, there's not a whole lot of, you know, I mean, Libya, Syria, Lebanon, all these other places, they lay down and roll over when the big boys show up and say, hey, look, you know, we need to go into your backyard. But, you know, there's a few of them who are standing up and being defiant, and that's just unacceptable any longer.
Well, here's another thing for you to consider. The best wars are fought without bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's wars going on without it being known as a war.
Right. Cold wars.
Yeah, but yeah. Look at what's happened even in recent history. We had a push at one time in this country against communism.
Right.
And the communist men of the time said they would not conquer America, but by silent methods, in other words, through gradual education, indoctrination.
Right.
So all they had to do is get control over or use certain key people within government, within the educational system, to start this process. And so
it starts with Darwinism.
Well, yeah, that's
the religion of the communists.
Exactly. And so that's what's been done. So there's been a war here in the United States of recent that has been without bloodshed. Okay, and it's been all over the world. Okay, the same thing that went on here is going on all over. So you see, we've been in a quiet world war for quite a long time now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you want to really put it that way, and there's been a conquering process that's been silent. Now, of course, as I mentioned earlier, really in reality, this country was already taken over in 1776 or by that time. It was already quietly taken over. But the people, the general mass population at the time, their ideals, their religious ideals, their theologies and so forth were still not congruent with this New World Order, with this Illuminati control. In other words, even though the government that was instituted was secret society control over the nation, the people did not know that, okay? Nor did they would even have agreed with it or even come close to accepting its principles and ideals at the time. But you see, through the educational process over all of these years, through public education and the media, the mindset, the group mind think of this country is now acceptance, has now gained theological acceptance of these ideals and principles of Gnosticism, of humanism, of the New World Order. So, and this
tolerance.
Yeah, you see, so this has been the war that has been waged. It hasn't been a war of bloodshed. It's been a war of thought,
right,
of theology, of propagating the lie of the knowledge of the tree of good and evil.
Right.
Okay. So that's where your war has been, right there, if you really want to look at it. So to look for a physical World War III or a physical war where there's lots of bloodshed is, in my opinion, a moot subject.
Right.
I don't really think that's what we ought to be looking at. We ought to be looking at the war that's already been waged religiously, theologically, to alter the mindset of the whole population of the world.
Indeed. And we're like the fortunate survivors, or we came out of the war, and, you know, I mean, we were trained just like any other communist to, you know, believe in a certain system. I mean, I grew up with evolution in school. It was taught to us as being factual. And now you've got all these people walking around who are diehard evolutionists, and they're calling it true science.
Right.
And it is about the shoddiest science on the planet. You know, it's not even true science. And here I've got people in college that I talk to who are looking at me like I'm insane because evolution has been proved through and through. And the truth is, it hasn't. It's just been taught that it has. So, and you know, the educational system isn't going to tell these people that, you know, this is still a theory because it's never been proven, or it can't be proven. You know, they're going to tell them that evolution is fact, you know, and teach it as fact. But the truth is, I mean, there's a big fight now between some group, right-wing group, that is demanding that the evolution theory be stated as a theory because they quit stating it as the theory of evolution years ago. And they just used the word evolution. And there's an organization that is just, you know, up in arms about it, and they're forcing, and in certain regions, certain areas, they're getting legislation to pass that requires that the textbooks of these schools continue to use the terminology, the theory of evolution. And furthermore, a lot of these, I don't know if it's the same organization, but there's at least one other that is getting the alternative creation science studies to be considered as a curriculum in schools as well.
Well, we have a third religion that's taken place in this venue, and that's called intelligent design.
Right, IA.
Intelligent design is a synthesis of creation and evolution. It's an in-between synthesis. What it really is when it really is at its core, not creationism, as a creator God would make everything. Intelligent design boils back to there was a force that actually designed this place. Okay, but they do not give credit to the Creator God. Instead, it tends to give credit back to the God of this world, which is Satan himself.
You know,
intelligent design, is going to eventually incorporate the new genetics, the new eugenics, the new transhumanism movement, the new genetic manipulation of all things. Will be incorporated into intelligent design.
You know, that was kind of a baby, intelligent design. They won't allow religious subject to come into science because they claim that you can't prove that there's God. Now, scientifically, that's an argument. They also claim that you can't not prove, you know, or prove that God does not exist. Therefore, it's a subject that scientifically cannot be argued. There's pros and cons either way, you know, that both parties claim is evidence. But ultimately, because the educational system is ran by, you know, the liberal media, essentially, the whole concept of God had to be taken out. So, with this intelligent design, you ended up with, that was like the baby that came of it. I mean, the only way to get in there and claim that there was anything is to go under the guise of intelligent design. But that, again, as you're saying, is a compromise. You know, it's compromising God, and it's giving way for somebody to corrupt it and utilize it, again, just like all things that seemed to start with such a good idea ended up being corrupted again, you know. So, people who don't know God aren't going to know God, you know, by anything that they themselves are going to do. You know, he has to step in there and do the doing, you know. A person who doesn't believe in God can't do anything of his own free will to make himself believe in God. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're too far away from the microphone. We can't hardly hear you there.
Well, what I'm saying is a person who is a non-believer, a person who doesn't believe in God, is not going to have the makeup to do anything that's going to make himself believe in God. It has to be by the will of God. And so many of these people simply are not his children. You know, he knows who his are and who his are not. And, you know, the Bible states that a lot of these wise men of the earth are not his, you know. The ones that are his are considered to be fools by the men of the earth. So you got a pretty good, you know, idea that anybody who's in these, quote, intelligent systems are not God's people. You know, God has chosen the foolish things of the earth to confound the wise. So, I mean, you're going into the whole educational system with, you know, almost everybody in there is belongs to the devil and simply are not God's people. And to find somebody who's going to change the way they think or believe, regardless of how much evidence you show them, is it's just, I mean, that's tough ground to plow. Let's just put it that way. Brother, I got to head out and get to this job here in about 15 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to cut us off here. I just recognize what time it is. We kind of went into overtime, but it's a great subject today, and I appreciate your contribution here at the end regarding the subject. I don't think it's talked about enough, to be honest with you, at least in public circles. So one of the things I'm going to do when I'm rich and famous is I'm going to create one of those Greek, you know, places where everybody comes and gathers and sits down and everybody gets a shot at it. You know what I mean? And you got the guy in the middle there and he's able to talk and everything for a few days, kind of like what Paul did. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just,
well, that's what Remnant Radio could be if people wanted it. I always encourage group participation.
Right.
You know, and we've done shows like that in the past where we've had on, a bunch of people all at one time doing, you know, that call in on the phone lines and so forth and have a group discussion.
Right.
Always encourage that, you know, where everyone can share and add to it.
Amen.
So people don't do that much anymore, it seems like, but there for first year Remnant Radio, we did that a lot.
Well, brother, maybe we'll try to iron out some things. I know I wanted to get a few different people together, but now I've been laid off of one job, so my communication with the one guy I wanted to have on the show is kind of hindered at that point. So, but I'm still going to make the effort to try to contact him and get some time together. Maybe we can have a little bit more fun over here. Well, listen, I will call you next week, and until then, God bless you, and God bless all the listeners.
Yes, God bless you. Bye-bye now.